Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David.
So, an Oilers loss. I always hate talking about Oilers losses. I'm getting, what am I? I just turned 56 this week, Bruce.
Happy birthday.
I've endured too many Oilers losses. Even when the Oilers are a team that look a lot better, I'm just tired of them. I'm tired of seeing them lose.
Yeah.
So that's my basic stance tonight. I'm just kind of, you know, the not blaming Talbot, but because all those, they were all tough chances that went in, I think. But they couldn't, the early goals, how many times have we seen that? It's just frustrating to see these early, you know, the first real chance of the game and it's in the net. I'm tired of it. And defensive breakdowns. That lead to these goals. I'm tired of those. So I guess I shouldn't watch, you know, that's hockey, right? That's the way it goes. So Bruce, we're going to do the two good things, two bad things, two numbers and two deep drinks from your pop can there podcast tonight. What is your good thing?
Well, I'm going to give the Oilers a little bit of credit here for turning a losing position into a loss, but doing so with a certain amount of honor. Like, this was clearly going to be a loss from the 5:44 mark of the first period when it was 2-0 for Washington. They did briefly cut it to 2-1 and then even more briefly cut it to 3-2, but they never could get back on level terms. But you know what? They battled hard, and they came, I mean, the third period and lots of the second period, really, Edmonton carried the play, and I mean, obviously that was score effects to some extent, but Washington checked the crap out of Edmonton. Like, there were sticks in the lanes and the shooting lanes, passing lanes, there was bodies, there was a few illegal checks, in my opinion, and it was, they kept bringing it, you know, guys like RNH, man, and he, that was like a playoff style in terms of the intensity of the checking, and man, was he battling through and trying to make stuff happen, and, you know, they couldn't make a dent on the scoreboard in the end, because after all, they were facing the immortal Phoenix Copley in nets, but...
Like they gave him a lot of work, though, Bruce. I mean, they didn't have, they had seven grade A chances. Washington had seven. It was a pretty low event game in that regard. This was far from run and gun. It was a gritty game.
It wasn't run and gun. No, it was a gritty game. And I thought the Oilers kind of actually matched up on the grit front fairly well. And they kept on bringing it. Like, they could have quit in that game easily, and they never did. So that's my good thing.
So my good thing is I've been critical of Jason Garrison, but mm-hmm. I thought he had a good game, and I thought he's mm-hmm. been playing a little better as of late. He's clearly a smart hockey player. Like, he knows how to read the game. He can be a little slow at times reacting to plays, but he's moving the puck well. He and Benning actually are playing well. Matt Benning is playing really well. Mm-hmm. So I'll go with the whole third pairing as my good thing. Matt Benning is, aside from the first two or three games of the year, Matt Benning has been really solid.
He's where he belongs on the third pair. Like, he was hitting above his weight class there, and it showed.
Yeah, but now he's
settled in with Garrison, and
they're getting the job done as a third pairing defense. They haven't, you know, there's been a few games where Garrison's been the cause of some goals against, but not tonight that I recall. And he seems to be making fairly smart plays with the puck, and he's holding his own. I mean, it was the top pairing of Larson and Klefbom that really struggled tonight, Klefbom in particular. I mean, he made some good plays too, but Klefbom it's going to happen, right? You're out there as much as he's out on the ice, you're going to make some mistakes, glaring mistakes defensively, and he made a number. But Garrison and Benning, that was an impressive effort from those two. And I think it's maybe there's – for Benning, he's put a number of really good games in a row, so mm-hmm. I have to give him credit. Bruce, what was your bad thing on the night?
Well, I'm going to sound like a whiner, but I'm just going to whine away and say I thought the refs were terrible in this game. Like, they were very poor. And I'm saying that looking at a stat sheet that said Edmonton had four power plays and Washington just two. And I acknowledge that. But I also acknowledge, well, I mean, first of all, it's 1-0 early, and Alex Chiasson blocks a shot at the point. and he's going to have a clear-cut breakaway. And Michael Kempney does the right thing, and he just skates into his way and cuts him off and negates the breakaway. Automatic penalty. It's just been like that's a penalty all season long for the last 5 years. I've been calling it that way. But somehow, neither ref happened to see it. And then that was just before the 2-0 goal, which was came during a time Edmonton should have been on the power play. Instead, the 2-0 goal, the stupid ref skates right into Brodziak. He's looking right at him, and he skates right into his path and takes him out of the play, and the puck goes right up in the slot, and they score. And that goal was on the ref. I'm sorry. I mean, Brodziak, I mean, I'm not sure what he could have done different, but what he did that I agreed with was he barked at the ref pretty hard after that one, and rightfully so. Because
I wonder if the ref ever have the liberty to blow it dead if they run into a player like that? Could they actually write like, okay, blow the whistle? I wonder if is that in the rule book that they could even do that? I don't think they could.
You're supposed to stay the hell out of the way, but this was a case where he thought something was happening behind him that he was avoiding, and in avoiding, and he stepped right into the guy who was looking directly at 3 feet away from him. Like, pay attention. I mean, I don't think that's too much to ask. And then there was the usual hacking and slashing on McDavid. And finally, the double standard on slashing, where Draisaitl got a slashing penalty for a love tap, and Larson got a slashing penalty for something less than that. And meanwhile, Ovechkin pulls off and just hacks Darnell Nurse with a two-hander. And, I mean, you could hear the penalty, let alone see it. Nothing. So, I mean, there was enough of those that stacked up over the night, and I was in a grouchy mood anyway because Oilers were losing. But it was a poorly officiated game. As I said on Twitter afterwards, younger me would have been enraged. Older me is just miffed. And I got two or three responses from other older people saying, older me is just as enraged as younger me would have been. So I know I'm not alone in this one.
It's one of those ones where I knew the score before I watched the game. So, I mean, I just kind of, you're more accepting than of all of it.
I'm getting enraged.
Yeah. So my bad thing, Bruce, Milan Lucic had one really great chance to score, but he didn't score. He doesn't score.
He can't score.
And I'm starting to... He had some good games. Like, he's had some good games. So I'm not going to make too much out of this. I'm not going to make an overall Milan Lucic comment right now. But, man, that was not a good game. And that line needs a faster player to work with these two other players for them to succeed. And based on that game, on his performance, he should be in the press box tomorrow night. If they're looking for someone to bench and get Ratty back in the lineup or Yamamoto, him and Brodziak would be my two picks, and definitely Lucic. And I don't think they'll do that because they're not really, they talk about accountability, but it only means certain players and not others. And he skates right into traffic with the puck. He's late getting there. He doesn't put it on the other guy's stick.
Fumbles it a foot outside the blue line and throws his mates offside. There was one beauty example of that tonight.
Yeah, Puljujärvi went in there, and it's just like, get him the puck. Yeah, really. Get Puljujärvi the puck as he's crossing the line.
Over the line and make a play then. Anyway.
So I found it really frustrating to watch that happen because I think Strome and Puljujärvi are pretty good players. They just, but to score in the NHL now, it's hard to do it all on your own unless you're Connor McDavid. You need to combine with your line mates. Mm-hmm. You need to make plays together. And you can't do that when you're playing with a guy who's fumbling the puck every time he touches it. And I know Lucic hasn't been this way all year, so I'll give him that. He's had some good games on the third line, but man, he should be in the press box for a game or two.
I didn't hate his game tonight. Like, I gave him a 5, which is to say he didn't move the needle at all.
Yeah,
but he's not at the point. He scored 2 goals in his last 60 NHL games. 2 goals in 60 games. And he's playing like number 4 minutes on the team. He's been on the first power play unit the whole time. He's had a high-end quality center on his line about 90% of that time. And he can't score to save his soul. He does other things right. And maybe we're looking at him wrong. Maybe we should say, well, he's like a good offensive lineman. You don't expect them to score touchdowns, right? But
yeah, Chris, he's killing. Come on. Like, that's he's not. Killing, it's
no, he, does, he does good things without the puck, but as soon as you give him the puck, the good things just stop happening.
You know, maybe maybe like I thought, like, you know, rethink the guy as a third line checking winger, and that might work. And I think it has generally worked. I mean, he's probably had more good games than bad since he moved to the third line, and he's not enraging fans anymore because he's killing Drysdale's or McDavid's game off. But he is not helping Strom or Puljujarvi, and it bugs me, and it also bugs me to know that someone else is gonna. It's not going to be him sitting, and we're going to hear about how it's all about the team and mm-hmm. you know, there's accountability. But okay, have him sit a game, and at least they took him off the top power play. I mean, they had Chiasson out there, Bruce, but they finally get the right shooter, and where do they put him? In front of the net. Like, if you want to get the right shot. Take advantage of it, put it out there on the left face-off circle, not in front of the net. I mean, you can put Drysdale or McDavid or Nart, they can rotate kind of down there. You can have a whirling spiral of those players, those are three other guys moving around, high slot, front of the net, right circle. They can constant movement. I think Chiasson, though, if you want to take advantage of him, put him out there where he can get a shot. So I don't know who's running the power play. That was another source of frustration. Of course, it's an enduring source of frustration. They did get a power play goal, you know, and McDavid scored on kind of a B chance. Good, mm-hmm. good. That's the second time this year. So I think their power play stats are a bit inflated by scramble plays and some puck luck. So this power play
on the rush, which isn't exactly in the power play textbook.
Yeah, it has been a bad power play. So I even though like it's got a fairly high percentage still, but it hasn't looked good. And it's not going to look good until they get a proper formation. So that's someone like, you know, it's that Letestu role. You can get a role player there if he's got a good shot. That's Chiasson this year. So they finally got him out there, but they didn't put him in the right place. So that's I have two complaints, maybe more.
Okay.
If you give me time. Bruce, what is your number for the game?
My number is 826. That's Cam Talbot's save percentage tonight. He faced 23 shots and four of them went in. 19 saves. 4-2 loss. He got beaten by Phoenix Copley, the immortal, playing net for Washington tonight. And Washington won that game in part because Phoenix Copley, who was named first star in the building, outplayed Cam Talbot. Now, you could look at the four goals one at a time and say, well, he didn't really have much chance on that one. Or it was a really quick play and the guy buried the shot. Now, I'll say he didn't have any chance at all on one goal, and that was the one that was deflected by Oshie that bounced off of Russell right to Ovechkin, and he hammered it into the net. Like, no goalie in the league is going to have a prayer on that one.
That was the power play goal?
Yeah, it was a double deflection that bounced right to Ovi. I mean, what are you going to do? But the other three, all glove side. Two of them were high glove side. One of them was glove side, short side of the Oshie goal, game winner, which is the same place he got beaten for the game winner the last time he played when Michael Granlund scored one up there from an even sharper angle. And, I mean, it was a good play. It was a nice pass by Backstrom, and Oshie buried the shot again. But, man, I mean, when the other team got seven chances and four of them wind up in the net, where are the saves? Where are the saves? You expect your goalie to stop one or two of those gold-plated chances.
And Bruce, I think this is why Koskinen's been such a revelation, right? Because we haven't had good goaltending here consistently since 2016-17 when Talbot was sharper. Mm-hmm. And what we see from Koskinen is – on those, all three of the, so let's give them the, like you say, the Ovechkin goals going in, like it's almost 100% chance,
no,
right?
No chance.
So let's say the other ones were really good scoring chances. There's 33% chances. Well, 66% of the time, the goalie's going to make that save. Mm-hmm. And Talbot didn't get those. Like, he did stop one breakaway. He did, there was one really big save, but Koskinen.
Stevenson, it was 4-2 already by then.
Koskinen made a number of great saves in those games, including one, you know, utterly heroic highlight of the year kind of save. Mm-hmm. Talbot is not making those saves, and he's had a couple sharp games this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but he's had some weaker games. Now, this wasn't a terrible game, but again, like I know what you're saying. You've got to seven grade A scoring chances and four goals against. That's not going to cut it.
How often are you going to win in this league with an .826 save percentage? That's why I just gave you the raw number to start with. And, I mean, some of it's circumstance. I don't want to put it all on the goalie. Just saying, .826 isn't going to cut it.
Yeah, you can't win. So my number is 3, which is the number of major errors that Kyle Brodziak made on scoring chances against. And I did count the one where he bumped the ref, Bruce. I mean, he still...
He partly got in there.
He didn't make the play. And he did... You know, I don't really blame him for... That was more the ref than him. And I'm sure he was very frustrated. And I would be coach. That was just brutally... But he had a chance to make the play and he got out-muscled. But it was really the first goal against Bruce that has me singling out Brodziak tonight, because the puck's just going into the corner and there's two defensemen who have to make that play. Klefbom and Larson were also to blame. But really it was Brodziak's man coming in late, I think. It was fundamentally his man coming in late. That he's the center and he should have picked up that player who scored the goal. And that was really frustrating. He's a veteran player. He set himself, his job is to stop goals against. And it was a fast play. It was a difficult play, but that's what he's paid to do. Like he can't be responsible, the major culprit on goals against, if you're the fourth line center. That's his job to stop those.
No, when your fourth line gets owned for two goals against, plus a third on the power play, Cassian and Brodziak, you know, they played 9 minutes and they each fished the puck out of the net 3 times. And on that first one, you know, Brodziak, like what happened there was Kara was back first. So Brodziak, I think, switched off and thought he was covering the point man. And Kara, first of all, he got walked by the guy coming in on the first rush. To me, that was a major on Kara, just saying. And then he went behind the net and he kind of took himself out of the play. And Brodziak was covering his wing. But to me, he needed to read that play and say, oh, there's the danger man in the slot. I'm going to give him the point shot because I can't give him the shot.
You're right, Bruce. He was covering Kara's man. But although Kara's man had gone behind the net with Kara, like they were both behind the net at that point. Mm-hmm. So, he's got to have his head more on a swivel. These are fast plays, and this is difficult. And
I'm chasing Larson's man into the corner probably wasn't the best thing either. That goal was a mess.
It was a total mess. And it was a number. And Kara's on the crap list, right?
Oh yeah.
And so are Larson and Klefbom, but I thought, you know, ultimately if Brodziak's head is on the swivel and he's reading that play, like, you know, because you hope for the veteran play, like the great defensive play from the veteran defensive center.
If he's left covering two guys by himself, then he needs to read which guy is more dangerous and take him out of the play, and I hope your goalie can stop the point shot as opposed to the rocket from between the circles, because nobody's got that guy.
Yeah, hockey happens fast. They like it's not easy. Say. All right, Bruce. Well, we got a game tomorrow night, do we?
Yep, they're back at it tomorrow night in Tampa Bay. 8-5-1 now, still pretty good. But be nice to bounce back with a better showing tomorrow. We'll see Koskinen, I'm almost sure, and then it'll be interesting to see who plays Thursday to close out the road trip between the two goalies. That game will be something of a tell.
There's a real excitement around Koskinen, eh? Like, I feel it. I certainly feel it. And he just looks, and I've made this comment before, I'm going to make it again. I think the other team starts to grip their sticks a little tightly when they see that big guy in net, and they start to miss. There seems to be more missed shots where they're trying to get too fine picking the corners because he's so huge in the net, and they start missing the net completely with their shots. It might be, again, I haven't broken down the numbers. I don't know. I don't know how you could break down the numbers, and I could be imagining this, but that's what I'm seeing is this just, he's so intimidating and so absolutely gigantic in that you just think, where are we going to shoot?
Yeah, well, Talbot, you go over his shoulder and you pick the top under the bar. Koskinen, if you shoot it over his shoulder, it's probably going into the netting.
Yeah. So we'll probably come down to earth real fast with Koskinen, and just like Chase, we'll come down. Look at all these players.
I mean, he's Anders Nilsson the second, right? I mean, let's see how. I mean, so far the parallel is very good. Hopefully, he's better than Nilsson, who had that one big rocket launch and then he came falling back to earth and never recovered. I think Koskinen may be a little more polished than Nilsson. He's certainly been around a few more blocks, but hopefully he answers the bell tomorrow. And if he does, he's looking to be the goalie of choice by the last game of the road trip on Thursday. Let's see.
I think if we went back to our blog posts from when Nilsson was on that real hot streak, there was probably a moment in time when we were as high on Nilsson and as excited about Nilsson as we are about Koskinen now. So that's
and they beat Boston 2-1 in the shootout. I attended that game, and Nilsson was lights out, fantastic. He faced about 45 shots, and he was just unbeatable. It was incredible how good he played. And I mean, Koskinen had a game like that against Chicago last week, and. And we'll see. But there was about a 2-week period there where Nilsson was as hot as a goalie can get. Now, what you need is a guy that can keep that up, not for 2 weeks, but for 2 months or preferably 2 years. And, you know, so we'll see what we got. It's obviously early days, but some promise with a 30-year-old virtual NHL rookie netminder.
All righty. Thanks, Bruce. I feel a little better now. I guess talking about Koskinen made me happier.
You can't win them all.
Even when the team is good, I just hate it. All right.
Thanks for listening, Bruce.
Yeah, thanks for talking, Bruce. Good to talk to you again. And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.